right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is October 7th, 2020. This is a collective bargaining session between the teams representing the UCF Board of Trustees and the UCF chapter of the United Faculty of Florida. Our first order of business this afternoon is to review the minutes, and those were sent out electronically a couple minutes ago. I don't know if everyone's had a chance to see them. Giovanna, do you have access to those?
I'm looking for them right now. Brianna, yes, she sent me the minutes. Do you want me to share my screen so everyone can see it?
That'd be great, actually.
Okay, Brianna, could you allow me to share? Brianna, could you allow me to share, please?
You should be able to share now.
Thank you. All right, so this is so everybody can see. So this is from the last time when we met, September 16, from 1:30 to 3:30. Everyone that was present on the bargaining team, everyone that was present on the bargaining on both sides. We discussed UFF proposal Article 23 salaries. We had UFF also had a presentation that went along with it. All of this are available on our websites. And you presented the first BOD proposal, the Memorandum of Understanding for Diversity and Inclusive Culture. And we today, UFF, has a counter proposal that we'll present today. If everyone on my team agrees, I agree with this. If everyone on my team agrees with this, then we could move forward.
I agree.
I agree.
All right, thank you.
I agree.
Okay.
Giovanna, I agree.
Thank you for sharing that screen with us. It looks like our minutes are approved. The next thing that we want to talk about is how we're going to proceed for today. Giovanna, what we would like to recommend we do is we look at Article 23 first so that we can potentially wrap up the CBA and then pick up on the counter proposal that you've got for the MOU.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. And we recognize that the last time we got together, you had presented a proposal for Article 23, and Sherry's had a chance to speak to the provost about that. The provost has also spoken to the president about it. And the bottom line is, at this time, we simply don't have any money that we can put on the table. So I know there was a lot of thought that went into the requests that were made in that proposal, and it is with regret that we have to say right now we cannot respond financially to that. And it really is a question of finances. I know last time your side made a very good presentation about how hard the faculty are working and how their situation may compare to faculty at other institutions, and that was received and is noted that was shared with us. It's just unfortunate that right now we don't have the funds that we can allocate to make those proposals realized. So what we would suggest that we can do now, at this point, we're authorized to TA on the last proposal that we submitted. I guess that would have been at the last meeting, or two meetings ago, that we proposed. We're authorized to go ahead and TA on that. If we're not able to do that, I think an option that we may have is to put bargaining on Article 23 on hold for right now. There seems to be some expectation that there may be different circumstances following the election next month. So we don't see any way that anything could change from our perspective prior to knowing the outcome of the election and seeing what the state legislature may do. So I guess we don't have much of a counter proposal. We're here to say that the best we can do right now is what we had offered last time. If we can TA on that and be finished with this CBA at our next bargaining session in 3 weeks, we open up the entire book for full book negotiations, and Article 23 would be open again for the 21-22 academic year. So I think those are the options that we have, is that we can TA what we proposed, or we can agree that we're going to put this on hold and see what happens in the next month or so.
Okay, so just to be clear, so I have three options here. So the first one is to TA what you presented to us about two sessions back. So it's no salaries, and it's pretty much status quo language.
Pretty much,
what's
yes.
already there. Okay, so that's the first choice. The second choice is, of course, TAing, and then with a little carrot of opening the full book, beginning with Article 23, with negotiating salaries for 21-22. Okay. Well, I guess it's part of the first option as well. Okay, and then the next one would be to do nothing at all and just wait until what happens after the November election.
Yes.
And that third option means that we would be bargaining 23 and 23 at the same time.
2021 through 2023?
Article 23 for this other period and Article 23 for the upcoming book. And we would not be surprised at all if you chose to continue with the position that you're in for the full book. That would be perfectly fine with us. Just, it would be nice to just have one Article 23 to worry about, because we can't talk about the next one until we put this one to bed. So I think what Chuck is saying is that we're saying we can put this one to bed and start immediately on the same position where you are now, or different position, whatever you choose.
Okay, but doing that would also mean that no one would get any raise for this year of 2020-21.
And I think Chuck just said that we're not authorized to give one, so
yes,
it's sort of a moot position in a sense.
Yes. May I?
But I just want to be clear.
I had a question.
Go ahead, Tala.
I guess the difference is that if what I'm saying is that they don't have anything to offer right now, on the other hand, there may be something to offer after the elections. I mean, I know you're not giving us any hope or anything like that, but basically saying that there may be a possibility to give raise for this period that we're talking about, the present period, after the election. So wouldn't we want to weigh in on that rather than starting anew? I mean, in other words, wouldn't we want to break up the two?
Of course, that's your decision, of course. But I think what I'm trying to make the distinction of is that there won't be any movement that we're authorized to give, right, Chuck? Isn't that?
Well, until there would be something that would appreciably change, yeah, I don't see us changing our position.
Okay, I had a question.
No doubt for 21-22, that version of Article 23 does reopen when we go to full book negotiations.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to go into caucus, and does Brianna, do you have the list of who's actually on my team? So it would be like me, Tala. Could you put us into a breakout room?
Yes, let me see.
So it's Marie, Kevin, Talat, Latarsha, Robert as president. Fawn, I think, is here. I thought I saw her.
I'm here.
Okay, yes. Oh, and Liz Elizabeth Dinker is here.
Okay.
Yeah, could you just put us and the team into a caucus so we can talk really briefly?
Me too, please. Elizabeth Harris.
Oh, you're not officially on the team, Liz.
On the team. Okay, fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have you, Fawn, Kevin, Latarsha, Marie, Talat. Is that everyone who's here?
Also Robert Casanello.
Is that Kevin?
Kevin Kofi.
Yes. Okay. Let me
open. And Elizabeth Dinker.
Okay.
Emery, of course.
Okay.
Briannas, may I have the permission to record? Briannas, could I record, please?
Yes, let me make you a host, a co-host again. You should be able to.
All right. Thank you. All right. So we had a very lively discussion in the back room, the breakout room. So we had a few questions, and I'm going to have each of my individual team members ask questions or do their comments because they're very specific things that they brought up during the meeting. So first one is going to be Talat.
Yeah, so I had two questions. The first one is that what needs to happen to the budget in order for raise to be considered? So in other words, if the budget remains the same, would we get a raise? If it increases, of course, we will get a raise. But so what needs to happen for the administration agree to a raise for faculty? And a related question that I had, because I understand that a certain percentage of the budget has been set aside by President Cartwright for some priorities that he is getting into, including purchase of a software to change the system and so on. And so I was wondering how that fitted into the priority of the things that need to be done to keep UCF morale at UCF high.
All right. Do you want us to answer these questions person by person or wait till we get them all out there? How do you want to do this, Giovanna?
Person by person.
Okay. All right. Well, Talat, thank you for your questions. And I wish I could give you great answers that we'd all like to hear. I don't know what needs to happen on the budget. Right now, there's just a lot of uncertainty. We simply don't know what might happen. And
uncertainty to me means that DeSantis right now is afraid to make any cuts because of the pending elections. And maybe after the elections, there may be a cut in the university budget.
I don't know. I'm not certainly going to rule that out. I think that's a possibility, depending upon what happens. We don't know if there's going to be a special session in the state legislature called after the election. What are they going to address if they hold such a session? All that is unknown. We don't have any additional information beyond what you have about that. And you mentioned funds that had been set aside for a new ERP system for the there's a big difference between something like that and a salary increase. One is these are funds that the university desperately needs to spend because PeopleSoft is has outlived its usefulness, let's just say. We need to do something there, and that's what's taking place. But an expense like that is going to be covered out of one-time funds. Well, when we start talking about salary increases, we're talking about recurring funds. And there is no comfort with the recurring funds right now.
Chuck, when we were talking about just $1,500 to everyone, that was not a recurring. That request was not for recurring, right? It was just a $1,500 across the board, like other universities had gotten. We gave you examples of three.
One-time funds.
One-time fund. So that came from one-time fund. And exactly. I know people soft and I would like to get rid of it. So I understand. But I think we really also need to understand in terms of the priorities and given that these are just very hard times.
Well, we can certainly communicate that thought. I agree with you that, we need to do something about PeopleSoft, and we've needed to do it for a while, I think, and I'm glad to see that it's about to happen. But, sometimes difficult choices have to be made, and, we can mention to our leadership that, that was one thought that was pointed out to us, that both a one-time payment and something like a new ERP system could each come out of one-time funds. Yes.
Yeah.
So, we'd be happy to mention that again.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Latarsha is going to speak next.
So, hello, everyone. This morning, I had the privilege of having President Cartwright have a discussion with my college, and my interpretation of his discussion was that he was very cost averse to any types of financial changes right now at the university level due to, like we've all said, the uncertainty of what the budget may look like moving forward. But also he gave a lot of praise to the faculty and what we have done. And while words are great and we do appreciate the praise, I think showing how what we do actually impacts university will be more impactful than the praise that we have received from him. So I have more of a comment than a question.
Okay, and I appreciate your comment. Thank you for sharing that with us. You remind us that, that was a comment that I think was made last time that we got together. And I think it's an important one that we remained mindful of. We wish we had funds that we could say are available, funds that would benefit us too, that would benefit all employees at the university. But right now, there just aren't the recurring dollars to do the salary increases. And I'm sure President Cartwright would rather show you than tell you how much he appreciates what you're doing. And he just doesn't feel comfortable doing that, and that's really what's been communicated with us. We would much rather come in here and tell you that we found this shoebox full of money, or a lot of shoeboxes full of money, and it's up, and they were recurring shoeboxes, but we don't have that, unfortunately.
Chuck, do you think you could share with them what a $1,000 one-time payment would be budgetarily for just our in-unit faculty?
$1,000 would be about $1.7 million.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure you have that in a perspective. That's, I think the president's not looking at, $1,000 or $1,500 per person. He's looking at, millions. There's no shoeboxes of that for sure.
And that's just the people in the collective, in this bargaining unit too. That's not the entire institution.
Well, thank you, Chuck. And also for the record, we are talking about, and we request about, you mentioned recurring, but we're also talking about non-reoccurring funds as well. So just to emphasize that. And then finally, we have Kevin. Thank you very much, Chuck and Charlie, for bringing up that $1,000 per in-unit faculty would cost the university $1.7 million. And so finally, Kevin Kofi, he wants to say a few words.
Yeah, I mean, you repeatedly said two things, Chuck. You said there is no recurring funds, and you've said there is no funds, and the latter was stated in your rejection of the union salary proposal. But of course, that union salary proposal included both recurring and one-time funds. And we've already sort of discussed this issue of one-time funds. You've now told us that there is no magic shoebox with one-time funds.
I said recurring, no shoebox with recurring funds.
Okay, so we do agree that there is a magic shoebox full of one-time funds. Specifically,
I don't know that I said that, Kevin, but go on, please.
Well, we understand that there's more than $300 million in reserve that the university is holding.
I don't know where that number's coming from.
That's what I understand to be the case, that these are being held in reserve. And so what you're telling me is that the administration, President Cartwright, is saying, no, he's not willing to use even 1% of that to help faculty at this time, provide faculty salaries. So that's your position, am I correct?
No, that's not correct.
Okay,
that's not
please clarify.
My position, I'm not agreeing that there's $300 million in reserve. I don't have that information available to me.
I think we're reacting to the proposal that you had on the table last. No, that one included different types of raises. It didn't include just narrowing it down to that one piece. No, I'm not saying that that would make a difference. I'm just saying that we have a whole proposal that we're reacting to.
Okay, and I think we're looking at it the way, as faculty, we would look at it. We're looking at the whole, but we're also looking at the individual pieces of it. And we're also requesting that the president and the provost take a look at it individually as well, not just as a whole. Like, it's not a take it or leave it sort of thing. It's a negotiation, right? Because that's why we're here, to negotiate parts of articles. And that's what we've been doing for the last 5 years. All right, so we just talked about it in caucus, and we decided to hold. Is that because that was one of the options?
Okay.
Hold, and I know we have another meeting session on October 28th. Maybe something will change between now and October 28th, given that our news, daily news, changes every hour. Maybe something will change between now and then. And so we thank you very much for considering our requests. I would like, you know, the president and the provost, I think all of us here, all the faculty that are here, would like the president and the provost to take a look again and to really start thinking about rewarding our faculty for all the extra, and I've already said this many, many times, for all the extra efforts they've been doing in the last 7 months or the last 8 months. Sorry, go ahead, Charlie.
We can talk about it, obviously, between now and then, but we'll probably want to know where you want to start on the full book, which articles that you want to kind of focus on. And that should probably be, if there's any ground rules or anything like that, every time you do a full book, you sort of review that whole thing. So just wanted to make sure that you were anticipating having that discussion again and kind of getting ready for what we want to tackle first, okay?
Okay, no, that's great. We were already thinking about it as well.
Of course. I figured you were, but I figured say it out loud is the best way to communicate.
Yes, yes. All right, well, thank you.
All right, well, thank you for getting back to us about that. We appreciate it.
I definitely want to come, I have a counter proposal for the MOU for diversity inclusion. So if you guys have the energy to do it, we'll do it. Is that good? All right, so we'll meet again on October 28th, and then, of course, we'll continue having conversations between then. So all of you received it? You, Charlie, Briones, Chuck, you received what I sent? Okay.
Yes, thanks.
All right, so I'll put it here so everybody can see. So UCF Diversity Inclusive Culture MOU. So what I ended up, so Chuck, you said it was five different people who looked at it and worked on it?
Yeah, in that ballpark, I think, yeah, five or six.
Okay, all right. So we at UFF, at least the discussions that we had was that this was a start. And I think it's unprecedented in our UCF history to have something like this. So we definitely appreciate the effort that was done, the seriousness that was taken to do it. And we see where, you know, we can see where people, different minds, different people worked on it as well. What we ended up doing is just working as a base of what you had written. So it's not the 5-page piece that we had before. And I did see some of the reasons for it. Like some of it was, repetition. So you reduced repetition, you did that, you consolidated some of the language. But there are some things here that we did point out. Monique is not here today, but she's also, I want to give her credit for doing a lot of labor on this and giving us a lot of different literature and materials to read to go into this MOU. And she's been just a wonderful person and faculty member and a colleague in putting this together as well, along with all my other bargaining team members, of course. So here, one of the things, and I'm speaking for Monique, she's not, I'm unable to come today, but aspire. So this one word, aspirations, we're constantly aspiring to be somewhere else. So we'd really like you to consider, instead of we aspire, let's we will, or we shall, or we will, I thought was softer than shall. But we will do these things and not just aspire one day, do them. And so a couple things here, fair evaluation, equitable compensation of all employees. And then we added of color and of those representing a minority or protected class. And part of this was, because I think last time it was someone from, I think it was the performance team. I don't think she's here today. Performance department or arts and performance. She was talking about like the last three TOPS hires were all white males. So it had nothing to do with, bringing in more faculty of color or diverse faculty. So we wanted to be this as clear as possible. So not just compensation of all employees, but we're talking very specific about faculty of color. The other thing too is develop a racially, ethnically, and culturally diverse team of administrators. So we added some language there on line 13. Other things here in phase one. So as you can see, we kept most of your language. It was just we added some things to make things as clear as possible. And so line 23 to 24. So, and work to eliminate any identified before it just said barriers, so we put and systemic barriers, because one of the things about systemic sexism or racism is that they're not identified. They're just, a lot of people just think of them as everyday things. It's like, one example I was using in my class today, girls wear pink, boys wear blue. Why? Right? People forget like why that exists. So that's why I put identified and systemic barriers, like getting out of ourselves to really think, okay, why do we think this way? Other things, I just added a few adverbs in front of like encouraged, like people should always, employees should always be encouraged to take these trainings. But I just added the adverb strongly encouraged. And again, over here related to line 26, where I added including those related to implicit bias and systemic cultural practices. Okay, again, adding that language of what are we talking about here? Kind of the practices, systemic practices. Other things here, I did see, this is wonderful to be able to have pedagogical strategies for blended learning, how systemic racism impacts hiring in higher education. So we're happy with that one, lines 27 to 30. The only thing was just to add, if you could consider live streaming these talks, because yeah, it's true. We could have COVID through 2022, who knows, maybe 2023, could be a new virus that comes after this. But to have the talks live streamed and recorded for the public, similar to what a lot of other public events are doing now. Again, just adding the adverb, strongly encourage faculty to, to do propose equity, inclusion, and diversity courses. The other thing too, I don't know how many other departments, if they advertise their courses, but I've had, as coordinator of my department of undergraduate studies, or the undergraduate history BA, is that we try to have our courses also on our department website to tell students. And I've actually had students who want to know what are our, do we have anything like race studies or race and sexism, or like, for instance, I had a student ask if there's any gender history classes. And I said, well, there's women history classes. And she reminded me that women's history is not the same as gender history. So just having those and announcing those on the department level, not just the college level. Lines 40 to 41 is one of the things that happens at UCF, and I got this from several faculty, is that a lot of stuff does go on at the Office of Diversity and Inclusion. And some people are actively looking at it. Other ones would be interested if they found out about it. But one of the things is a lot of the times is they don't even know what's going on. They don't know all the happenings that are going on. So we thought it was great to have college level ambassadors, but if these could college level ambassadors should be invited to speak at the Faculty Senate, where a lot of faculty actually tune in to find out what's going on, or at one of the UFF meetings. So we would be open and amenable to having one of the college ambassadors talk to our members at any meeting. So if they can't make the Faculty Senate, perhaps they'll come to one of our meetings and talk about like what has been going on, what have they been learning. Here I put, you know, they could come each semester to report their findings or whatever's going on, just to inform people what is going on. I like this line here, and I know we've been talking with this with both Sherry and Charlie and also Sarah about how you can report your work environment to administrators. And I just had a question regarding human resources, because I know for a long time we didn't have an actual like phone or any, I mean, we could call human resources, but they would send you back to Charlie or back to Sherry. Do you know, is there going to be a specific number for these types of complaints?
I don't know of a specific number in that case. What I would expect is that there might be a range of numbers. It would depend on the issue. I don't know that there's a, if we've got a one number that's got to fit everything, it's got to be the switchboard. You know, the general number, I think is probably the only option that we have. But what we do know is that there are a variety of different concerns that are raised from time to time. And I don't know that there's one person that's always the appropriate one to handle all of those concerns that come up.
Well, Chuck, typically with human resources, I mean, do you have HR liaisons and staff embedded in the colleges? So that's at least how I anticipated that would go, is you can make a complaint through HR, through the rep you already know in your college. And that would be a good avenue kind of that already exists for the faculty, rather than establishing a new line in HR. But we can talk about that more and see if that makes sense, and actually talk with HR about how maybe they would best like to receive the concerns and get back to you on that.
All right, thank you. All right, and then over here, lines 45, let me see a few more. Okay, 45 to 47 comes from our language, from our MOU. So if we could continue to include the provide equitable and transparent evaluation practices and promotion policy. For some reason, some of our members are were reporting that some, for instance, were receiving very, very detailed instructions. I think I used the example, like for instance, like a man would receive detailed instructions of what he should be doing in order to go to the next level for promotion. Whereas some of the females were saying their chairs were not really giving them a lot, or just telling them, you're doing a good job, you know? And they felt like in their heads that they were being told like, great job, honey, you know, that type of thing. And so just providing, so it was more of an issue like wanting to have a very equitable, you know, if you're going to give a lot of comments in a CPE to, let's say, male faculty, you should do equal amounts for the female faculty, that type of thing. And also, again, you know, the evaluated committee shall demonstrate uniformity in the evaluation of an award, promotion, or job candidate. And this also comes from faculty who compare their notes to each other. So I think that's how they know that sometimes some people get more comments, some people get encouragement to apply again, whereas others are just told, you didn't win, and nothing more. They don't get any other feedback of any sort. So I think that was, you know, if the evaluative committee, and this could just be as simple as just informing the committee of, if you're gonna give a lot of comments, give everybody a lot of comments. But we're not saying, you know, don't give comments. Of course, we're saying that they give comments to everybody equally. And lastly, in phase two, so we thought phase one is an excellent start. I mean, this is, I think, unprecedented. We're doing, we might be able, a model for future universities and how to do this. And phase two, a few things, line 52, we did put mandatory, but you know, we could also say strongly encouraged if you're amenable to that, for diversity and inclusion training for all faculty, the new faculty orientation. I mean, I know OIE talks to new faculty, but I'm not sure if they're encouraging them to take their workshops, or if they have some sort of video that they watch or a module. So that we can negotiate how this is done. I mean, when I think I mentioned this before, when I went to my university in Vermont, when I first started there, I had to take modules on diversity and inclusive training. When I came here, I didn't have to do any such thing. And this place is far more diverse than Vermont. So, and last over here, organized. We had talked about this one. So I wasn't sure if one of the other places about having a forum included this. We had talked about this with Kent Butler as well, also with you at a previous meeting, about organizing an annual open forum on the work environment, like a town hall is what we were envisioning, an open forum about the work environment for faculty and professional employees at UCF. So that, and I think the president also at one point talked about having a town hall to talk about issues of race or inequalities. So we put that language back in there. And 61 to 63, we had also talked about this previously, and we added it again here, which is to develop some sort of mediation system, perhaps with an external consultant or somebody for an OIU, however you want to imagine it, to deal with unsatisfactory resolutions between a chair and a faculty member for problems that are specific outside the CBA. You might think, like, why should this be a UCF concern? But you know, in academics, we talked about this, like people are in the same department for 20, 30 years, and they're still fighting over the same thing. You know, maybe there could be some sort of mediator, because one of the things we want is we don't want to inhibit productivity, right? We want to be productive faculty. And the way to do that is to reduce some of the tensions in the workplace. Okay. All right. So that was it.
Okay. Thank you. If I may, before I forget, mm-hmm. I'd like to share some data about okay. Inclusive Excellence Program.
Okay.
I believe I misspoke last time. That's no longer called the TOP program.
Oh, okay.
It's called Inclusive Excellence.
Okay.
There's also a partner hire program that Faculty Excellence has. So I got this information from Vice Provost Janet Jasinski.
Okay.
With the Inclusive Excellence Program, the university has hired 16 faculty.
Hmm.
9 women, 6 of whom are Black, 3 Hispanic. There were also 7 men hired. 6 of the men were Black, 1 was Hispanic. And she also pointed out, unfortunately, one of the Black women that was hired is no longer at UCF. I don't know what happened there. There were 17 tenured or tenure track partners hired through the partner hire program. There were a total of 11 women who were hired. 5 were white, 6 were Asian. And I can't say right now whether any of those are tied to some of the people that were hired through Inclusive Excellence or not. I'm not sure. So there were 11 women. There were 6 men also hired, under the partner hire program. 4 of the men were white, 2 of the men were Asian. And then there have been 12 non-tenure earning partners hired through the partner hire program as well. 7 of those 12 were women, 3 white, 1 Black, 3 Asian, and 5 men, 4 white, 1 Asian.
Okay. And what year for this? This is just most recently or last year?
I believe this is since 2017.
Oh, okay.
Because that's really when the top program started.
Do we have the total number of faculty hired in the university so we can really compare the proportions?
I don't have that information right
now. We can get that information, Marie.
You have to be careful it's not duplicative that you count people twice. That's the only thing.
All right, so Chuck, do you have any comments or anything about the MOU?
Well, I appreciate the careful thought that's gone into it. I think there's some things that our team will want to talk about. I think Sarah may have some things that she will want to mention as well. I think we're gonna have to go back and look at some of these things. This is just a personal reaction. I'm gonna react to one thing on here, provided I can find it. Okay, line 45, for example, says provide equitable and transparent evaluation practices in the promotion policy. I think this is a difficult statement for us to have in there. I think what you described is clearer than what's here. And let me explain why I say that. What I heard is that there are some faculty who are not satisfied with the feedback that they're getting, where they stand in the promotion process, or why I was recommended for promotion or tenure, and or why I was not recommended. And I'm sensing that the feeling is that if somebody gets a lot of feedback, that's good. Why can't we get that for everybody? So to me, it's a question more about the responses being similar. It isn't a policy issue. It's more kind of a faculty relations issue. How are we dealing with this? But we're not changing any promotion policy. It's really how we communicate with the candidates. So that's something that I would like to talk about with my team. Does what I'm saying make any sense?
Yes, it does.
Because truthfully, if someone is denied tenure or a promotion in their eyes, and if this happened to me, it would be true in my eyes, I'm going to say it's unfair. It's not equitable. I know there's somebody in another department that got promoted, I didn't get promoted, it's not fair. I'm convinced I'm 10 times as good as that person, whether that's true or not, but in my eyes. So whenever someone is denied a promotion or tenure, I think there's always a reaction that it's not fair. I'm trying to get to something that we can objectively say was followed. If there's something that we want to agree on, it needs to be something that we can clearly say, yeah, that was done the way we said. I think when we say equitable and transparent, a lot of that equity and transparency is in the eyes of the beholder.
May I say something here,
Chair? Sure.
Oh, I think, yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I think you probably, what the policy is probably not the word, it's probably promotion report or something like that. But I was just going to mention that there's something good that is in the system already, where if you vote against somebody, you have to provide now a reason for that. Isn't that the case now? It didn't used to be. It used to be that we were asked to, you know, the person, the PNT chair, was asked to provide a reason for any negative votes, but there was nothing that held you to it. But I believe right now, if any person who is going to be signing, if they're voting against, then they have to provide a reason for why they're voting against.
The way it is right now, when the faculty vote, the narrative that accompanies the voting result has to reflect that vote. So if Talat, you and I are on the same committee, and you're much nicer than me, you vote yes, and I vote no, it isn't that I have to provide a comment, but there should have been some discussion that took place where I would have said something in front of everybody that ultimately gets included in the narrative that goes with the...
Then I had misunderstood. I thought what it is in place is that, I see. So it is not that anyone who votes against has to provide the explanation.
Well, what's supposed to happen, if I'm going to be that person that votes against a candidate, I believe, and I think the university believes, that I have an obligation to speak up during the discussion so that maybe people can't necessarily identify that I'm going to vote negative, but they would understand that there are some concerns that I'm expressing that probably ought to be reflected in the narrative.
Right. I was just trying to see if we could find a way so that whenever there's a negative vote, there is a record of why this vote is negative. And it shouldn't be just left on somebody's goodwill to provide that, but rather that there be a mechanism of anonymously, when you vote against, then you say, this is the reason I'm voting against. And I think that if we could have that, that would be very helpful. I think I know what it is now. So, you know, we have this Qualtrics, right? Because you get the name of the person and then you, at the departmental level. And I don't know if it is only true of ours, but what happens in our case is that when you vote yes or no. And if you vote no, then you have to put a comment. I don't know if that is only true in the College of Sciences, but that is how it is. So then what happens is that the PNT chair can then get all those negative comments. Because if you said no, you can't get out of the system without putting in an explanation. I mean, you could put garbage there, of course, but you have to say something. So negative vote, basically. So I think if that is true of all colleges, and then if that is also true of the chair or the dean, that the moment they say no, then they have to give in writing, verbalize, you know, how they made that decision. That makes it transparent. I'm just trying to provide some remedy because I know that this is an issue.
Talat, I believe that when in the past, when you abstain, you could actually write the reason why you abstain, at least in our college. I don't remember if it was the case when you said no, but I agree with you. If we could do it for abstention, we could probably also do it for when you say no.
The no is what happened to us this year. It wasn't there until last year, but this year, at least in College of Sciences, or I don't know if it is College of Sciences or whether it is physics, so I don't know. All I know is in my department, when we were voting as faculty members on tenure and promotion of any colleague, if we were to hit no, we had to provide a rationale before we could get out of the system. And I think that's excellent. So if it is in physics, it should be adopted everywhere. And if it is in the college, then it should be adopted in all colleges.
Well, I think these are very interesting things that we can consider when we go open book and renegotiate the whole CPA.
Right.
But I don't think that we want to try to do that right here in an MOU on diversity. It seems to be beyond the scope of this memo.
Anyway, but Chuck, that's something to consider. Yes, the physics department has a good system. Yeah, something like that would actually, I think, make many very understand better, like why they didn't receive a certain promotion or award.
But otherwise, you know, that's just an example. I think there's some interesting ideas here that our team probably needs to talk about.
Did you want to go into a caucus, or what would you like to do?
I think Sarah wanted to kind of talk a little bit about the executive order, didn't you, Sarah, and kind of what we're, what position that put?
Yeah. Okay. Please. So I'm sure some of you, if not all of you, are aware of the executive order on combating race and sex stereotyping that was issued by President Trump on September 22nd. If you're not, I can send it to everybody. I'll just link it in the chat. I'll be talking about it.
Thank you.
Sure. So I'll try and summarize it very briefly, but essentially, the gist of the order is that they find that critical race theory and references to systemic racism, white privilege, a lot of the vocabulary and conversations that have been happening surrounding race this year and recently are, quote, un-American and should have no part in our, you know, discourse as American citizens. I want to make it clear that I personally, and I'm speaking for myself as an attorney and a person, disdain this executive order wholeheartedly. However, thinking about, I'll just go on to kind of further explain where they're coming from. So the idea being that federal workers should not be trained on these subjects, and also that any federal contractors should not train their employees on these subjects. And we actually, going forward, will be required to put a certain language in our federal contracts saying that we won't engage in this type of training. And the penalties are, I mean, pretty much a death penalty for a university, which is loss of federal funding. So it's very strict, very strong penalties. And so this obviously started a lot of discussion among university attorneys. We had a call in our trade group about this last week. A lot of questions about how this will be enforced. Seems basically like it's red meat ahead of the election, very politically motivated type content. But we do expect some movement on it before the election. I think the agencies are already taking certain steps to enforce the executive order. That being said, an executive order is not a law. Doesn't even have the force of a federal regulation, and it does go away with the president who issues it. So that, of course, puts us in a precarious position time-wise, because we have a national election coming up in less than a month, and depending on how that election goes, we will have an idea if this is something that will be in our future or not. So I think we could expect that if Joe Biden wins the race, that this type of order would not be part of his administration, but that it very much would go forward if President Trump is reelected. So it got me thinking as I was kind of researching the executive order and compliance and enforcement about how it might affect our MOU. So I went back and looked at the last proposal that we had actually put forward, our group, and found a few areas that if I were looking at it as an official in the Trump administration trying to enforce this executive order, that they would probably find problematic. And I know that because there has been some guidance, like an Office of Management and Budget memo issued about kind of what they are gonna look at as red flags in a training. And it's literally like a list of banned words. It's crazy. You can't say critical race theory, white privilege, intersectionality, systemic racism, positionality, racial humility, or unconscious bias. Now, they say that that's not going to be a,
you know, be all end all if that word is in a training that it violates the executive order, but that's the kind of thing that they're going to be taking a second, you know, a second look at or digging into. So, of course, that feels to me a little bit like thought control, mind control, a kind of per se violation of the First Amendment, very uncomfortable in our academic environment to think about self-censorship in that way. So anyway, I just find it deeply disturbing and uncomfortable. That being said, I don't want to put the university in a position that we're under a spotlight or investigation for something that I don't think that we're deserving of, because I know their view is that basically teaching these concepts is inherently sexist and racist. I know we intend to do better than that. And we're all here talking about these issues because they're important to us, and we're doing better than that. So part of what we might do in our counter proposal is literally just take out these exact words that are going to be the red flags, at least for a time. And then in a month from now or so, when we have a better idea of what the future of this might be, we can put those ideas back in as far as proposed topics. Because that's really where they come up, is like, okay, we're going to have a discussion about diversity and inclusion, including implicit bias. So if we just take out the including, that kind of gives us all sorts of, you know, latitude in the future to have discussions about, you know, anything under that umbrella. But then we're not kind of calling attention to our efforts or I think running afoul of the executive order in case we're under the microscope for this. And I don't know at all that we are. I'm just trying to, you know, this is the kind of stuff that keeps me up at night as a university attorney. So just trying to be conscientious of that. So that's kind of my proposal, really, is that in the short term, that we remove references to kind of those banned words. And then in the long term, either add them back in once we have an idea of whether or not we'll be able to proceed with these types of trainings and keep our funding. So I just wanted you all to be aware of that, so you weren't surprised if you saw some of our edits and understand where we were coming from in that. It's not at all a lack of commitment on our part to those values. It's just trying to walk the line and do the best we can in being clear to our community that these types of things really do matter to us. And I think by putting it in our first draft, we showed that they do, but not trying to violate an executive order and violate agency rules that might jeopardize our funding and our ability to kind of really be here and do what we do.
Thank you. Talat?
Yeah, so Sarah, yeah, I understand where you're coming from. In fact, I'm glad you sent that link. But we do live with other universities, right? I mean, I think, you know, other universities are probably also looking at these issues. And so I'm just wondering. Yeah, so I'm, and I haven't really heard universities, you know, going on. I mean, executive order, as you said, you know, didn't Trump issue an executive order also about how many millions was going to be distributed to people and what happened to that? I mean, it has no teeth in it, right? I mean, so in order for something to be really implemented, it has to become a law, and the precedent doesn't make it a law. So I'm just wondering as to why we will be so shy right now, given that we are only, you know, 4 weeks away. And, you know, it is, I mean, you know, I just hope that things will be different on November 3, which is, again, 27 days away. And if they're not, then all bets are off, right? I mean, we will have to go back and change a lot of things that we do, including, I don't know, anyway, I don't want to think about that. But until then, I don't see why we have to start shying away from what we have been doing, because in any case, an MOU that we're talking about isn't going to be effective in the next 27 days. I mean, we're not bringing about any change in the course content, in the way we speak, the way we do business and all that for the next 27 days. So while I do appreciate where you're coming from, I don't see why we need to start being cautious and, you know, hopefully we will not even have to be cautious. And if we have to be, then it can be done after November 3. So I would be very disappointed if we took this MOU and took out all the statements which really had to do with systemic racism. And basically it all started, not only because, you know, it has never been there before. I mean, we have all, what came out of the recent events is not just something that came out of nowhere. It's been here. And UCF administration and faculty, they got together and they have come this far. So my plea is that there's no reason for us to be really taking this decree from the White House seriously at this matter, at this moment. Hopefully we will never have to. That's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah, I understand. Marie, sorry?
Was that you? I just had a question just to understand the system. Can I ask it now or after you?
Can I just answer Talat's question first about the enforcement aspect? So you're right that it's not a law. My understanding is that typically it would require, and or even to mount a legal challenge, which I expect there will be several from universities and or collections of universities, even private employers are not thrilled with being told how they have to train their employees just because they have a federal contract. And so basically how that would happen is that he's instructing his federal agencies to take their action. Once the agency takes the action, that can be challenged. So it's more of, I don't want us to reach agreement on something during this 4-week window of uncertainty and then have it be something that is in violation and we have to go back and change it. I'd rather at least hold off for 4 weeks and then we can get the MOU that we all want, that has the teeth in it and acknowledges the things that we believe are important to bring up in these types of trainings and have the conversations, the workshops, the updates, that kind of thing. So it's more of just, I guess, a plea for putting it aside, not even putting it aside, just putting it on hold for a few weeks until we can get some clarity about what we can agree to. Because right now, I don't think, given that the federal funding piece is attached, that I could recommend putting this in writing and signing off on it. Because we basically are committing to doing training in the future that violates the executive order. Perhaps we could say, oh, it's not a violation until we actually do it, so maybe we just won't do it. But I just think we could get a better MOU in 3 weeks or 4 weeks. So it's unfortunate because we were making really good progress. And I know it did take quite a while for us to get our version back because we were going through so many different people to try and put together the best version of MOU for you guys. So I hate to even have to ask it, but it was a shock when I read this. We still don't really know what it's going to mean. And I think we'll have a better idea of what we're facing in the future in a few weeks. And we can get a better MOU if we wait. So Marie, sorry, can I answer your question now?
Well, you sort of answered it, but I'm still not quite satisfied because maybe I don't understand the system. I know it is an executive order that the president wrote, but so far that has not affected or, you know, Congress has not made any move on that topic. And in order to withdraw funding from education, Congress would have to say something. The lawmakers would have to do something. So why are we anticipating and moving just on an executive decision? Because the president could say whatever he wants in an executive order. He could say, today, this is a dictatorship. That's it. So are we going to just all just agree and move along with his executive order? So I would say this is a great MOU. it doesn't cost any money. The language is fine. It has been used before. Let's move with it. Now, if for some crazy reason we have a second term with this president, then maybe at this point you guys can come and say we're not going to do it because we're bound by Congress. But right now, none of this is happening. We are just acting on an executive order that is not tied into any specific law at this point. So we're not running right now the risk of losing any funding, from my understanding. So if you can explain.
Well, not in the short term, but we are running the risk of being involved in a lengthy and expensive federal investigation, which could ultimately result in penalties. The federal agencies do have the ability to penalize the university as a result of an investigation. And that's really kind of the end result of that process would likely be. But we really don't even know to that extent yet, because we haven't seen any details. There's all the agencies are supposed to be coming up with details about how they plan to enforce and implement the executive order, which we don't have yet. And some of our, not necessarily our Florida sister institutions, but countries or universities around the country, multiple universities have put their diversity and inclusion trainings completely on hold for several weeks while they try and figure out what this means. There are universities who are thinking about this and are starting to act on it, starting to kind of trickle in the media, but I think those conversations are occurring quietly and behind the scenes right now, but we'll see them become more prominent in public as we get closer to the election. And at this point, I understand, Marie, why it makes sense or why you would like to move forward with it. But given that we're so close to having more clarity, I just don't see the benefit of moving forward and then running the risk of having to undo it, change it, revise it in the short term. If we can really just know with certainty what we can do and make it stick, especially because it is a multi-year plan, and we really do want to commit to it. Like, I see that you all want to do more than just aspire to it. We want to be able to say we will do this and that. So that's just kind of where we're coming from. And we can talk about it more on our end as well. I really just wanted to put it on your radar if you weren't aware of it, and have the conversation. And so there wasn't a misunderstanding about if we do have to make certain edits, you understand where we're coming from. And it's a response to this and nothing else.
Well, I think that UCF can take a stronger stand on this and don't anticipate the problem. I think if UCF thinks about faculty and what they're going through, you know, I've gone through stuff at UCF. And I was hoping that in putting this in words, UCF would show me that it has the back of Black faculty. Now, just because of an executive order, UCF is really quickly backing off. It took 2 months, or maybe longer. I don't know when we gave you this MOU. It was stalling. And now this executive order came on September 22nd. You're very quick to come back and tell us we can't do it. I'm calling this, I'm saying that you were not with us. It was like looking for a reason not to move forward with this. We're not even asking for money this time. We asked for money on Article 23. UCF said no. We know UCF has some money, but UCF said no. MOU, where we're just asking to be treated like everybody else. Black people, women, transgender, every human being, asking to be treated equally. UCF cannot stand with us in front of President Trump to say enough is enough. We are with our faculty. UCF cannot stand with us to power through this for another month because of legal ramification. These legal ramifications take months. The decision to tell us no or to pause at this point is too quick. You coming to this too quick for me as a Black person listening and watching how you are acting with us. Well, how you are looking, I'm not talking about Sarah, I'm talking about the system.
Mm-hmm.
It's too quick. UCF should stand with us for at least some other month and say we're going to move forward with this MOU. It's not costing us any money. We just want people to be aware. We just want people to work together. Everybody's a human being. We all on this journey on Earth. We did not decide to be here. You know, some people may think, yeah, well, prior to coming, we made the decision that this is what's going to happen. But this is reality on this Earth. We are entitled to the journey. And people should stop putting obstacles in front of other people. That is selfish. You put obstacle in front of other people to preventing them to move forward. People are telling you, I suffer from this. This has been done to me. And you're telling me just a signature of a president. I'm not going to say anything about the man. I respect human beings. Everybody's going through stuff. But what we're asking is just to be human, to be accepted as human being, not Black, not white, not whatever. The Blackness is just the beauty of it. The whiteness is just the beauty of it. The brownness, the whatever color, it's just like the magnificence of it. And UCF cannot stand with us. I don't know at this point what I can expect from UCF. I've been here at this institution for 30 plus years. I have kept my mouth shut so many times. I have suffered through things so many times. I didn't say anything. Today, UCF is showing me its face. Thank you, Sarah.
Well, Marie, I want to make clear, too, that this is just my thoughts, my personal thoughts, reading through the executive order and where it may conflict with our MOU. We still have to have the conversation on our end about what we're going to do with regards to the MOU. I wanted to put it on your radar so you knew about it and knew that we were discussing it, but we will come back with a counter proposal. And at that time we can, you know, no decisions have been made. I'm sorry if I made that, if I gave you that impression, because that's not the case. And the decision will be made at a higher level than the people on this call. And I know that they all support what we had in our original MOU and believe those things. The problem is, if we interpret this as risking our very existence in federal funding and providing federal financial aid for our students, that we're stuck between a rock and a hard place in that regard. And I understand that there's still some confusion about whether or not that's really the position legally that we're in or not. But it's an unprecedented landscape for this, and it's still something that everybody's trying to figure out, and information is going to come in every single day. I still feel very confident that we will get a strong MOU that everyone agrees on that actually acknowledges and agrees on our community values. And I think, Marie, what you were speaking to and what you have included in these drafts so far are our community values. We just have to do so in a way that basically allows us to keep to be here and continue teaching and basically our continued existence. It might sound dramatic, but that potentially is what's at stake if we are to violate these things. Again, we haven't seen how the enforcement is going to look. I just wanted to put it on your radar. And again, personally, wholeheartedly disagree with this executive order on every level.
Thank you for saying that, Sarah. But if I may add, something that touches me personally is that I believe in April, I sent an email to President Cartwright and to Provost Johnson, to which I have yet to receive an answer. This is the first time, after being here for so long, that I take my guts to write an administrator and telling them what I felt through the situation, you know, that happened in March. And they never answered. They never replied. I've been on meetings where they were present, where I did say, you know, when it was my turn to speak, I have written an email to the president, and I still did not receive an answer. I was hoping that maybe that would jog his memory, or maybe he would say, wow, I didn't get that email, let me check. We're in October. I've yet to receive an answer from the president and from the provost about everything that I said to them, how I felt as a faculty at UCF, and what I was hoping that they would do to show me that they have my back. I'm still waiting. So I want you to know that I don't believe there are going to be any changes, because when you're the president of your institution does not respond to you personally, to your email, that says million to me. It says a lot. So I know that you have the MOU. I know that you've looked at it. You've looked at it with other people. But the first opportunity that you guys had to come and tell us that it's not going to work because Trump said we can't fund diversity and equality and all this stuff. We can't use all these words, which we all know that this is what is dividing us. But UCF would rather play with fire, play with whatever the president is saying, because that divisiveness that he's putting among us is what makes the system run.
I do understand the frustration. And again, if I was unclear, I'm not at all saying that I don't think the MOU itself is going to work. At the most, I would say that you will see an edit of deleting or revising 4 or 5 lines. That's just kind of a spot check I did. Ivana, you just sent the new draft right before our bargaining session, so I was able to kind of just scroll through real quickly. And really it's just making things less specific and giving ourselves more latitude going forward to do the types of training that we want to do in the next 5 years. So basically just taking some of the specifics out that I think would be a red flag if someone was looking at this, but still move forward on all the other good things. And we'll consider, of course, all of the new things that you all added this time. So this is not at all saying that this is done, that we're not taking this seriously, that we're not looking at this any further. This was just explaining if I have to make some red line changes, which we don't even know necessarily that are going to happen. We still have to go talk on our end about that, that you'll know where I'm coming from. And we can flag the specific words if it's, you know, for example, we'll have workshops on diversity and inclusion, including implicit bias. If we just take out the including implicit bias, we keep the whole sentence. We will still have workshops on diversity and inclusion. Or we could come up with other ideas that don't have the buzzwords in it. It's so stupid that we have to do this. It's so stupid. I hate it. But it's really just the way I'm trying to see for us to get the MOU that we want and not end up with these catastrophic consequences for the university. But again, I think
I want to thank you, Sarah, for everything that you're doing. You, Sarah, and Chuck, and the whole team. Whatever I'm saying, it's not against you. I hope you understand that. I'm talking about a system that wants to divide us, and that's where I am projecting. So I don't take it as a personal movie, as an angry woman or whatever.
No, none
of that. It's passion, and it's love, and it's wanting the best for the country.
Oh, you know, I got my email off. I'm sorry. Marie, would you mind forwarding the email that you sent to the president/provost so I can follow up on it for you?
I can do that when we're done with the meeting. I'd have to
Oh, no worries. There's obviously the urgency would have been a couple of months ago. But if you would do me that courtesy, I would appreciate it.
Charlie, just one more thing too. I had also, actually the Provost Johnson had wrote to me about a meeting with my team regarding this MOU, and he didn't respond. I responded back with him sometimes, like, yes, definitely, please schedule a time for us to meet. And he didn't respond back.
Okay. I'm not also sure where we are on scheduling the consultation. I don't know if where we were, because I've been out. So I will follow up on.
I'll send you an email. I'll send you his email.
Email that will help me get things moving on that. Sarah, thank you. I think, you know, you've taken that about as far as you can with the moment we have. and work with what we can and see if we can't come back with something that we can work with. And probably because we're going to start full book bargaining on the 28th, we'll probably have to schedule a meeting just to talk about the MOUs. We may have to parse it out because I don't want to, the full book bargaining is a lot. It's just a whole lot of articles, and I don't want to end up cheating the time that the MOU needs in order to get that completed. So we'll look into that as well, okay?
And also, I'll be in touch with you about organizing for October 28th, so it's not just a mess. So
right. Yeah. I know you like to plan those things out.
Yeah.
Sorry, Chuck, you were...
Before I lose the opportunity, I just want to thank Marie for her comments today. I hear what you're saying. Our entire team hears what you're saying. And I really appreciate that you're willing to be so open with us. That's how we can begin to solve issues at this institution or any place. If people just open up and share from their hearts, let us know what's going on. So thank you. I really appreciate what you said today.
I hear years and years of frustration, and
And maybe you would also like to convey to our higher administrators that, heaven forbid, if things don't change on November 3, then we would fight tooth and nail to keep the advances that we have made. We're not just going to take it sitting down.
Thank you. We will convey that for sure.
Thank you. I think being open and talking human to human, that's what we need. And that's what I'm doing. I have a Facebook group of white people who just want to know what's going on and make a difference. And we talk about, you know, all of these issues. And I think that human to human, that's what we can do. Forget about the institution, you know, human to human, heart to heart. We all bleed red. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Marie, Giovanna, did you have more people that had questions for Sarah, who is reminded that she's on tape when she says she really, really hates something that the President of the United States said?
Yeah. I'm gonna still write on my First Amendment there.
I just, you know, thought I'd point that out one more time. Giovanna, did you have the next person for another question, or are we looking to tie things up now?
I think we can tie things up, also given the time, so yes.
I like your necklace, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Alrighty, well, thank you very much, and Giovanna, we'll be in touch about scheduling another meeting for the diversity MOU.
Okay. So
we can not cheat that in the time it deserves, okay?
All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, we're gonna hang on there while everybody else goes.
Okay, thank you. Bye, thank you. Chuck, I think you're supposed to officially end the meeting.
Meeting adjourned.
All right, thank you.